Mel Gibson loves torture. He-Man is defeated by movie theaters, and the hottest TV star is Paris Hilton. This week and more on 30-2010. Welcome all to another pop culture time machine journey through 30, 20, and 10 years ago with 30, 20, 10. That's what we do, people. We look at the world of pop culture, some light news, TV, movies, music, video games from 30, 20, and 10 years ago. This week, and this week is August 4th through August 10th. Maybe you had a birthday. Maybe you died. I honestly don't know. I don't know, but I'm one of your hosts.
If you did die, thank you for not turning off your podcast feed.
Yes, please don't unsubscribe once you're dead. I'm Chris Antista. Who else do we have with us?
Who's that girl? It's Dana Goodman.
Who's that girl?
I'm Home Run King Dave Rudden.
And attorney fanboy Henry Gilbert.
Oh, attorney!
Yes.
That stuck me for a second. God damn it, I can't
believe... I thought believe... you said attorney. I'm like, wait,
I love
attorneys. What attorney?
I love the land of Eternia.
We have a ton of fun and not-so-fun things to talk about, and that movie being chief among the things I kind of never wanted to talk about again. I mean, everything's been said about it, but stay tuned for all of that stuff and more as we look at August 4th through August 10th, 30, 20, and 10 years ago. Like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Well, I did see one movie this week, and it was Argo Man.
Yeah, so we did. Let's talk about that.
Yes, so Henry and I saw the Mystery Science Theater live tour, the Watch Out for Snakes tour. I went to the bathroom during intermission, and when I came back, all the lights went down. I have no night vision because I took Accutane, and one of the things it does, aside from making you kill yourself, apparently, is it destroys your night vision, so it's like, oh, fuck. All the seats are full. I can't even just jump into a random seat. Thankfully, you guys saw me, and I ran up the stairs with a full beer. I didn't spill a drop of it either.
That's good.
You all saved me. You saw me looking around like a dumbass.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. We start, as always, in 1987. News this week. Whoa. The 20th Comic-Con opens at the San Diego Holiday Inn.
Wow.
Is that Comic-Con moving to San Diego?
No, it's been in San Diego.
It was never
long.
New York?
Like, no.
I don't think so. It was the comic convention in San Diego. Mm. There were also comic conventions in New York and comic conventions in major cities, but the San Diego Comic-Con... Mm. That has always been there.
SDCC. Just a glimmer in Chris Hardwick's eye.
And yeah, that would make this, we're recording this during Comic-Con, and it's fifth. That makes it 50 this year.
Yeah.
And I am having a little FOMO that I'm not at Comic-Con, but it is... I have a lot of fun at it, but it is a monster. Yeah. Like, it is a monster thing that will drive you crazy, especially working at it.
And did you see, I don't want to slander Comic-Con. There's just, when I first started going, there's a lot of things I look forward to that don't really exist anymore, as this has become a physical diorama sizzle reel for Warner Brothers and Disney, essentially.
And it's about selling things that are only there instead of buying old comic books or buying stuff you can't buy anywhere else.
I was saying that on Bonus Time, our Patreon show, that I went to a local anime and cosplay convention, and that had the elements that I missed from Comic-Con, and I bought a bunch of bootleg shit. Where's all the bootleg shit? Yeah. Where am I going to buy my racist cartoons and Turkish Spider-Man?
Where's the saddled wrestler sitting at a table alone?
Well, San Diego's become insanely corporatized. I would love to have seen what it was like in 1987.
And there are pictures. And the one sad news for now, and Comic-Con's concluded, I saw, is that Mile High Comics, for the first time ever, isn't attending.
Oh my god!
You know, Henry's eyes just got real big because you know it's a big deal, and it wasn't. It wasn't so much they were driven out by movies and TV shows. It's like no, the price they command for movies and TV shows is not a price three guys who run a comic book store can pay anymore.
But they upped it, and also I remember Mile High a couple years ago was very open about. How can we sell anything when nobody, if we don't have exclusive stuff? People don't come to us to buy things. They come to buy the exclusive thing from multiple vendors. Yeah. And so, it's just not about vendors anymore. But Comic-Con, 50 years now, man.
Well, maybe there's some non-depressing news inside of the movies of this of 1987.
Maybe.
Living Daylights is number one, Diana's favorite James Bond movie.
It's not my favorite.
That's what I heard last time.
Shut up.
Nadine. Diana, tell me about Nadine.
What is this?
Nadine's a Robert Benton joint with Jeff Bridges and Kim Basinger. Robert Benton did Nobody's Fool, Kramer versus Kramer. Mm. So, you know, your personal...
I love Nobody's Fool.
Yeah, I love Nobody's Fool, too. But this is, I mean, it's kind of supposed to be like a comedy. Reviews are not that good. Sorry.
And Happy New Year with Peter Falk and Charles Durning. I feel like I looked into this.
In August?
Yeah.
Happy New Year, man.
Was this one that was nominated for like an Oscar for makeup or
something? Yeah, it was. They did aging makeup on everybody.
Aging makeup on these people I only associate
already,
with being old.
Already pretty old.
I only think of them as...
This is an extension of Christmas in July.
Yeah.
You get New Year's in August.
And we talked about this. I love talking about the rise of the non-Disney movie, which was only made possible if you were pretty much... using your film's budget as a marketing budget, which gave rise to My Little Pony, the Care Bears movie, the Transformers movie. So there's a sequel, Care Bears Adventures in Wonderland, and I vaguely remember it because it had better animation than the movie.
Slightly.
And one thing also has is a rapping-ass Cheshire Cat.
Oh, no.
The Cheshire Cat. Who else?
You know, I see that princess in a lonely room where the wizard's got a locked away. Now he's one bad dude, he's in a nasty mood, and he wants to be the king someday.
Care Bears.
I'm going to give it to the animators. They put a lot more work into that than I expected. I think, though this is something that drives me crazy with a lot of kids' animation, that they just take a thing that's public domain is Disney made famous. They're like, well, now it's our cartoon characters in Wonderland.
Henry, this feels like a direct slam on Pinocchio, Emperor of the Night, and I won't hear of it.
that is one of like the most like sinister ones they ever did. And well, I also remember like all the Wizard of Oz movies, and though this one actually isn't public domain, but the very recent and being memed quite a lot, Tom and Jerry and Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Please don't do this. Leave us alone. I still have a weird affection for the Care Bears. I was never that much into boy toys. I love colorful and a lot of girl stuff. So I love the Care Bears. I was allowed to buy it without a lot of stigma. I love the way it looks. I have an animation cell I love. But these movies are the closest thing to like an improvised script you'll ever see. There's no second draft. It is the worst shit I have ever seen in my entire life. It is the dumbest shit I've ever seen.
No, I slept with my Tenderheart figure for the longest time. Mm-hmm. But
girlfriend still sleeps with something she calls Bear because I don't think she knew about the Care Bears, but it's Grumpy Bear.
She doesn't know IPs too well.
Yeah, and whenever I do an impression, I guess I'll go to sleep with you. And she's like, that's not how Bear sounds. Like, yes, it does. That is exactly how Grumpy sounds.
Not in her heart.
And why have I seen this movie?
Yeah.
Madonna and Griffin Dunne, and who's that girl?
This is...
like a second or third movie from Madonna.
We've had a couple. I mean, Desperately Seeking Susan was a breakout one.
Shanghai Surprise,
we had already. And then this is a lighter... It's a, you know, it's a wacky comedy. It's vaguely... has some elements of bringing up Baby that it's remaking in there, and the idea that it's a straight-laced guy and then this crazy girl and there's a wacky adventure, and it's not very good.
Yeah.
Madonna's great at so many things. I think it's unfortunate she wants to like do all this film stuff when it's not really where her talent lies.
This is like Madonna at peak Madonna-ness. She is just like, she sounds a lot like Cyndi Lauper in this movie. Very Brooklyn-y.
Yeah, she's got a really high pitch. She's really talking like this. Come on, Griffin Dunne, we're going to have adventures.
But it's also impossible to understand if you're just 10 years younger than us that no other celebrity will occupy every facet of pop culture in the way that Madonna did during this period. You had to think of her, if you're an executive, as an ingredient you could put in anything and sell more of.
Yeah.
And so I don't fault them for trying to make her a movie star.
No way.
And she's cute.
And it, like the song who, was way more successful than the movie.
I know the song for some reason.
Also, like I have one of the memories I have of this movie is this is the first time I ever saw two men kiss.
Really?
Because at the end of the movie, there's like these cops that are following Griffin Dunne and Madonna around the whole movie, and at the end, they realize they're in love and kiss each other, and it's like, I was like 7 or 8 years old, I'm watching this on HBO, I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't know that guys did that.
The first time I saw two guys get down was Spies Like Us at the end of the world. That's the first time.
I watched this as a bad movie treat a couple of years ago, and there were like a couple jokes I laughed at. I think there was one that was so random that it cracked me up, that it's like the bad guys, they steal a limo and I think it's full of bridesmaids or something, and all the bridesmaids are screaming ah, and then they cut to like two like highway patrolmen just standing next to each other by the side of the road being like, yeah, it's really hard to meet a nice girl these days. Yeah, I don't know what to do. And then this car full of screaming women drives by and they're like, yay.
It's a beer commercial.
It's so that's not good.
Here's a movie I've never seen. But when about Next around time. The time
commercials for it, everywhere.
Around the time I was getting movie woke, I was seeing the sequel to this film, leading me to believe this film, Stakeout, is a much bigger film than I believe.
This was a huge hit.
It was.
Yeah.
Emilio Estevez, Richard Dreyfuss.
Home Pictures presents Richard Dreyfuss and Emilio Estevez in a John Badham movie.
Did we practice safe sex?
Probably not.
Stakeout. Who says a little danger can't be a lot of fun?
Was Richard Dreyfuss getting some in that trailer?
Yeah.
That is weird.
Of the two of them, they're two guys are staking out Madeline Stowe's place. Ooh. And but she's so pretty and sexy. They think they're supposed to be staking out this like big ugly dude or big ugly chick. And it turns out, oh, it's like this bad guy's girlfriend and she's super sexy. And then, they both start like trying to get with her. And,
weird.
Like, but they're not supposed to be involved with the person that you're watching. And then there's wackiness and sneaking around and hiding under beds. And I mean, it's an action comedy.
Yeah, John Bottom on a huge run of that stuff with War Games, Short Circuit, and then followed this up with Bird on a Wire.
Oh,
Bird on a Wire.
Never mind.
still, it's evocative of a certain kind of 80s movie.
I think that was one of the first films I saw a butt in. Mel Gibson gets shot in the butt, and so they take his pants off.
It's one of the consistencies you can find in most Mel Gibson movies. The second one we'll talk about in the next
decade from now.
What else? It had another Stakeout. I remember because Rosie O'Donnell was on a huge rise to stardom, so she got to be the Joe Pesci to their Lethal Weapon and appear front and center in all the posters.
This is a lot of fun. I mean, it's a kind of movie that, again, they don't really make anymore. That's, like I said, an action comedy, but not like effects driven or anything. It's just sort of,
People arguing a 48 Hours-esque
exactly.
film.
And Mel Gibson's butt anecdote just triggered like a synapse in my brain that made me think of in Loaded Weapon, Emilio Estevez makes fun of that by saying, I'm just taking a moonlight walk with my butt out.
And I am dying to hear what Diane has to say about this film.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Oh, peace. Paramount Pictures is having a party.
Fantastic.
And everyone's invited.
Go get him, Kahuna.
Now playing at a selected theater near you.
How is this not the most popular movie ever made?
Well, because this is my parents' nostalgia manifesting itself into a film.
But it's got things I like.
It does.
Pee-wee.
But okay, so Back to the Beach, which is a Brady Bunch movie of beach party movies from the late 50s, early 60s, starring Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello, making one of those types of movies, but also like knowing that they're stupid and kind of making fun of that. Mm-hmm. So it's very postmodern. Because remember, we've talked about in the 80s, the 50s were really popular for reasons. And so they bring back the stars and it's like, we're going to have a whole bunch of cameos from other stars from, you know, Gilligan's Island. We're going to have Don Adams from Get Smart. And we're going to make a beach party movie.
With Pee-wee Herman in it?
With Pee-wee Herman in it about how, like, we're going to pretend Frankie and Annette were married, and then they've got, like, grumpy kids, and then they're like, come on, we'll go on a vacation, and then they just, like, do a dumb beach party movie.
It sounds like you're telling me this is Annette Funicello's Unforgiven.
They've got to save, like, a dozen rec centers at once.
Well, but it also, it looks like one of those types of films they did back then of just, like, Pee Wee Herman's not in the whole movie. He's there for one scene, and then I take that Gilligan and Skipper scene is non-canonical, though, to the Gilligan's Island canon.
They got off with the help of the Harlem Globetrotters.
No, then they did the other movie they get back, and then at the end of it, they're shipwrecked again. So I choose that as the end of the timeline.
It's the beach they're on, but this is very old genre.
Yeah.
Kind of getting a send-off, but I guess a tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah,
we're making
exactly.
fun of the tropes of this whole genre.
It's a tongue-in-cheek. The idea of, like, yeah, that he's the surf king of the beach, and then they go back to the beach, and he's got to, you know, do bad superimposed surfing scenes
it's
versus
beautiful.
Teenagers, and I think that one of their kids is, like, a little punk goth kid, so, oh, that's so weird, because they're so perky and clean-cut and... Gee gosh whiz, come on everybody, let's just dance and sing.
I only know Frankie and Annette thanks to Full House. Yeah, they were an entire episode, and they, like, I believe it was Joey is cast on their show, and then it gets turned into a cartoon instead.
Yeah,
and he'd be
holy
a voice
shit.
Actor. Remember that?
Yeah, vaguely. I'm vaguely remembering all of this.
I know my mom was a fan of these types of movies, and she's the only one who gave me any context towards them. She said, describe them as slightly salacious for the time, but kind of super
you could
G-rated.
See her belly button.
Yeah, G-rated teenage sex comedies for the 50s.
Yeah, basically. I mean, they're interchangeable. Mostly, they're fun because they have, you know, they've got this goofy beach party fun. They always have, like, a couple older actors show up that it's like, it's Buster Keaton that shows up, and he's like,
I hate the big kahuna.
You know, or Boris Karloff for some reason. Wow. And Don Rickles was in a bunch of them, and he's fun. And then, like, and a musical act that will be possibly inappropriate. Like, I think it's Ski Party. James Brown shows up, and it's like, James Brown, you are so much cooler than these fucking people. No, what are you doing here?
Those movies also existed because we didn't have music videos, so it was like, I can't see these people perform in a movie.
Right. Yeah. Oh, there's a joke about it, and that thing you do, that they're starring in a shitty beach movie playing a band.
Was it the Shrimp Shack Shooters?
The Shrimp Shack Shooters.
Exactly.
What a pull.
It.
But Jesus, we gotta talk about this film.
I know we're gonna talk about it.
From a distant galaxy, they have come to Earth. Dolph Lundgren as He-Man, Frank Langella as Skeletor. Only they have the powers to be masters of the universe.
That's the end of the movie.
Live the adventure.
It's just so incredible. This is one of the biggest disappointments
of my whole
life. I know
too much about this. Well, actually, I will give credit to... the writer Blake J. Harris, who did the Console Wars book. He did an entire very good
oral history,
written oral history of this movie, The Masters of the Universe. But the short version is that He-Man was a huge hit in the first half of the 80s,
1982 to 84.
Yes, and Canon Films was looking into doing their big movies, as we just discussed, Superman 4. This was their other tentpole, and they wanted it to be a big deal. They ran out of money halfway through making it, and they really fucked over the production. They also cast a big-name star who couldn't speak English so well in Dolph Lundgren playing He-Man.
The Men-at-Arms character has to do most of the talking, but they couldn't even translate the right characters into the goddamn
property. That was one of my favorite parts of the... Electric Boogaloo documentary, where someone was like, they met with Sylvester Stallone at a red carpet, and you're like, oh, we got Dolph Lundgren in our new movie, and he's like, you're not having him talk, are you?
you're giving him lines? Like, I never did that in Rocky IV. He was not supposed to talk. Yeah, and
I loved He-Man. One of my first favorite things. Yeah. Totally regrettable in hindsight. It's a terrible show.
As a 5-year old
marketing. I loved it, and I loved Orko most of all, and it's just an effect they didn't want to bother with, so Billy Barty got in fucking elf makeup.
Billy Barty.
Yeah, what's his name? Gwildor, a character that does not exist.
I built this sound machine here.
The cinema debut of Courtney Cox, to some extent.
Well, that's the other bullshit of it that, again, for money reasons, they spend the first maybe 10 minutes in Eternia.
Yeah.
Skeletor has conquered the great Castle Grayskull. And then they meet this Gwildor asshole, and they just hang out in his house. And then he's like, hey, I built a keytar that'll send us to Earth. And so then they can just film shit in Earth.
They can shoot in a fucking mall, like the whole thing.
And then basically they teleport into a combination of Back to the Future and Terminator. Just like, what is this strange world? But also, Courtney Cox is basically Linda Hamilton in Terminator.
Yeah. And it takes place in the modern day, because they could not pay to shoot Eternia for real.
Yeah. My biggest problem night, I think, too. Oh, save even more money.
Like a closed mall.
Yes. And it's called Masters of the Universe. Nobody called it that. Yeah. It was He-Man.
That must have been a legal thing, right? Why would you not call it He-Man the movie?
He-Man was a dumb name.
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. It's not even said in the... It's like barely said in the title. Yeah. I think they eventually remove it.
I think it was to distance themselves from He-Man because it wasn't as cool in 87.
And that's the funny thing in that oral history, because Cannon wants to make this film, and then, like, well, obviously we'll have marketing support from Mattel, who is making a fucking truckload of money off this. Not in 1986, in 87. It was, the phenomenon was over, and they left Cannon with the bill.
They said they were going to split the pay. Cannon pays their half first, and then halfway through the movie, they're like, so, Mattel, where's your money? They're like,
this product's dead. This brand's
it's
over.
It's dead. We make the movie or don't. We don't care. You pay for it. And so...
So it's cheap, boring, and dumb.
They got Frank Langella in it because he knew they needed somebody to make this work at all. Like, he is far too good for a Skeletor. Far too good.
Good for
the
him.
Looks he gives when the homoerotic torture of He-Man is happening, when he's being stripped to the waist and whipped with a laser whip. Ooh. And just the look on Skeletor's face, like, It's very... He knew what he was doing there. And the last story I love about it is that they just didn't have an ending. They're like, well, it's time to film the ending. And then Cannon shows up like, you got to shut this down. No, like, we can't.
Return the lights out in 10 minutes. Wrap this movie up.
The guy who built the set where they're supposed to have the big sword fight, they're like, we can't film it here. We got to tear down the set right now. And so if you see, it was in the trailer just now, the actual ending fight is in darkness because they're like, we got one day with Dolph and Frank. Just clang swords against each other for a few hours. We'll cut it together in the edit and we'll make it work, but we got it. Like, we need this. Can't not have an ending. A film can't not have an ending.
One of my favorite things that we did a whole Laser Time episode, which is like this show but topic based, about stingers, right? I think pre-Avengers, like, because Marvel was really bringing that back into style, where like there's something that happens at the end of the film, and just the last shot of the film is Skeletor popping out of the water he falls into and yelling, I'm back!
Yes.
No, you're not. Ever. You're never coming back.
You and M. Bison, you're done. Don't worry.
At least Frank Langella's still alive. But it's not good. It's not a good movie at all, but it's fun 80s cheese, I guess.
It's one of those things that's surreal. It seems like a joke that this went this far. Especially some of these pictures I'm looking at now. Jesus.
Yeah, and they didn't get... They got some of the characters, but they also had to make up new enemies too, like the Swordmaster dude. And
there's
like
almost no one that you would like from the show or your action figures.
And the Darth Vader ripoff Lizard Man. I had those action figures too. The Lizard Man could spit out sparks.
Cool. I still love those figures because they were all like just like wrestlers with otherworldly one gimmick. This one, what does it do? It stinks. That's what it does.
Stinkor.
This one sucks. What do you mean? He has a suction cup. He sucks.
But Dolph Lundgren saying, I have the power, that is very much to me Radioactive Man saying, Oppenatem.
You're so right.
I have the power.
I didn't even think that might have been what Simpsons was referencing. Maybe that's something you can bring up, Henry, on Talking Simpsons.
I will. Yeah, actually,
It won't be that long.
That reminds me, too, that the comic artist Paul Chadwick, who worked on Concrete, that's his big claim to fame, he has a comic that's basically a retelling of the making of this movie, where Concrete is working on it as like a living special effect. And it kind of revealed that I think Chadwick worked on the movie or knew somebody who worked on it, because it was full of things that like only came out 20 years later in interviews.
But that wraps it
and
up.
And nobody saw it. It was a big old flop.
And I'm too young to... I just got a movie based on my favorite action figures. I'm not that discerning. I'm 6 years old. And this... I'm like, this sucks. My grandmother's like, this does suck. Why did you ask me to come take you to see this? But we'll wrap up movies there and go into TV. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I think we already covered that on April 7th.
Speaking of low budgets.
Yeah, we'd already covered that Airwolf had moved to USA and that they killed off Borgnine and everybody else on the show.
It was. I thought it was one of the most important shows when I was young and started to discover television, Airwolf.
Just because they were running on USA after the Cartoon Express, weren't they?
Yeah, and I think that was absolutely part of it. But
And so now it's officially dead. The last episode airs on USA of Airwolf. The end. More Airwolf.
Airwolf, a show based around a helicopter the production could no longer afford. So they used a bunch of footage shot for the first couple seasons.
You get rid of Borgnine. I'm out of there. I ain't watching.
And then on August 8th, there were two premieres of short-lived shows. This one only ran six episodes, but it's a... it is a show called Animal Crackups, which is Alan Thicke hosting a game show starring celebrities where they answer questions about animals, and he's like holding a bunny in it. The only clip I found this is the only clip I could find just from a Loretta Lynn fan who taped her appearance on it and uploaded it to YouTube. This is off of VHS, but. It's not Loretta Lynn in this scene we're talking about. It's a stand-up who I was shocked to see.
I know that it's doggy paddle. Even if they say I'm wrong, I'm so sure of myself. So cocky. Mm-hmm. So bon vivant, Alan.
So you'll take a right answer no matter how we cut this.
This is right, yes.
The amazing puffin moves like a jet underwater. Check him out.
All right. Let's go. It's just a show animal clips around celebrities. Wow. It's like animal crack-ups. It's also a pun on animal crackers. Get it?
No.
But that's
Dom Irrera.
That was Dom Irrera. Yeah. Yes, hanging out with Loretta Lynn and a bunch of. It's him.
I'm gonna ride this stuck like a Viking.
And Loretta Lynn ends it with a very uncomfortable scene. I didn't want to share with people if we're talking about hunting, eating coon. Which, is what she... It's a raccoon. It's what she referred to it as.
My word.
Let's move on to the other show.
My word. I just wanted... I don't even have her name yet. When I do research for a bunch of this stuff or try and find super deep dives... There are certain 80s fans who are taping every appearance of their favorite actor. There's a movie I've been trying to find from Disney, The Young Runaways. Mm. And I couldn't find it forever until... And this is a way I learned how to research stuff. Oh, what's... Jessica... 80s actress Jessica something or other. She was in Weeds recently. I can't remember. She's in Hudsucker Proxy. She's the woman, the fast talk of Dame in Hudsucker Proxy.
Oh, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Jennifer Jason Leigh. So there's a Jennifer Jason Leigh YouTube fan page, and they uploaded the entire film because they happened to record it. It doesn't exist. It is non-purchasable. If this person wasn't a giant fan of Jennifer Jason Leigh, it would not exist.
That reminds me when I was trying to find footage of a lost DC show, and the only person I found it was someone who uploads videos of women in boots. good. More power to you, buddy. But on August 8th, this had actually premiered earlier in the year, but now the network was burning off the rest of it after it had been canceled in the summer. The Ellen Burstyn Show returns for four episodes in a row.
We talked about this.
No one cared. But it stars Ellen Burstyn, who's a Broadway legend. She is her grandmother's played by Elaine Stritch, an even bigger Broadway legend. Yeah. And her daughter is Megan Mullally.
Oh.
Yep.
And it's a generational story about women. And here's a cute scene.
Yeah, well, Mom said that I was the best dancing duck. Well, I was the worst dancing duck. I stepped on all of the other ducks' feet, and I forgot my one line to the raccoon.
Don't tell me. I was so embarrassed. I told everybody I was the frog's grandmother. And the kid who played the frog was Chinese.
Now, see, I can always count on you to tell me the truth, even if it might hurt a little.
You know what they say. Abuse skips a generation.
Nobody says that.
What?
Look, it's clever. Who says that? It's witty. It's it's wannabe James L. Brooks dialogue is what it is. But hey, wasn't Megan Mullally a real cutie back in 87?
I didn't even know that was Megan Mullally.
She kind of still is. Parks and Rec?
I just mean in that scene there, too, like in their 80s looks.
Wow. But no games this week. Everybody's still trying to finish Metroid, struggling in vain. But
the code wrong.
In music, you get Shakedown by Bob Seger off the Beverly Hills 2 Cop soundtrack. We played that in our bonus show that we do for our patrons at patreon.com/lasertime. But you also have new releases from Between the Lines by Five Star and the Who's That Girl soundtrack. So is that we're going to play us into 1997 with Madonna's Causing a Commotion, Diana?
Yeah.
Is that off the Who's That Girl soundtrack?
It is. It was in the trailer and everything. It was a big deal. Ooh. Like... you're getting a whole new Madonna album coming out with this movie. There's a song in the trailer. You haven't even heard it before. And here it is. And it's fun.
All right, people. We will see you in 1997.
Ahoy hoy, everybody. This is Bob Mackey.
Chris Antista.
Henry Gilbert.
And when you're done listening to this, we'd like you to check out Talking Simpsons. It's our chronological exploration of The Simpsons only on the Leisure Time Podcast Network.
Where we'll discuss why Barney is the MVP of Season 3.
Whatever you say, Mom!
When we try to figure out what every reference means.
Weren't you one of the little rascals?
And where we'll tell you how to avoid the poison donut.
There is a poisoned one, isn't there, Smithers?
No, sir. I discussed this with our lawyers. They consider it murder.
Damn their oily hides!
For all this and more, listen to Talking Simpsons every Wednesday at TalkingSimpsons.com or wherever you find your podcasts.
Coming in with real world rejoiner music. 311, what is this? Yeah. Beautiful disaster?
The worst, yep. Man. So much bad weed has been spoken by white guys listening to this shit.
Well, that's because this is new. I'll be missing you still, numero uno. But
when
new releases,
will it end?
Transistor by 311, which includes this song. Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars by Wu-Tang Associates. Kill Army and Love Songs and Underdogs by Tanya. Who's Tanya? I don't know.
Who's Tanya?
I'm sorry,
who's Tanya?
I don't know either.
Just
Tanya. Something the kids were liking in 1997.
Exactly. Yes.
Debbie Gibson Light in the news.
I never remember this.
I don't remember this at all.
I remember this. I can tell you why I remember this. I worked in a bookstore this summer in 1997, and this was like the best day when this news broke. There was an issue of Playgirl with nude photos of Brad Pitt.
How nude? Front or back?
Total nude.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh. But they were, I think they were a couple years old. They were gotten by like a paparazzi because he was on a nude beach or something. Playgirl comes out with this issue. He immediately sues to stop it. And, you know, because it takes like a week or something for court to hear it. Like, you know, they're like, okay, well, like, we'll hear this case. And then judge finally says, like, you got to recall all copies. He didn't have the rights to those photos. But they're sold out already because Streisand effect. When you try to stop something from being seen, it draws attention to it and everyone sees it.
Whoops-a-daisy.
So, yes. Yeah,
we would withdraw the issue, but it's become the most successful issue of all time and we don't have any more.
Yeah.
Yep. They were completely sold out by the time they were supposed to be recalled.
Playgirl is just so crazy to me. It was just like, I don't know.
There's a really good oral history just came out of Playgirl.
Really?
Yeah, about how it was supposed to be for women, but it's also for gay men, and trying to figure out, you know, that men were in charge and the women that worked for them were trying to be like, no, we don't want
to see this. It's
and they're like trying
like
to un-gay it, but it's still
like asking
you
a lesbian to look at a Playboy. Like, why would I want
to
see any of this
shit? Well, yeah. But as a gay dude who looks at gay porn, like, I don't want to just see a dick. Like, it needs to do, even an aroused one, it's like, it needs to do more.
Need a story.
Do something. Come on.
Put some dinosaurs around it. Tell me a story.
But, I mean, that's what Playboy is as well. Like, they don't do sex in Playboy for photography either.
They don't.
Yeah.
And
romance me, Playboy.
To their credit, they sometimes tell a story. Like, you look at their pet peeves like, oh, that's why she's on a volleyball court. that makes total sense.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean, it was a real invasion of Brad Pitt's privacy.
No, it was. You're totally right. But this day, working at a bookstore was the best.
Oh, really?
Because we had it.
You had it.
We had it. And we would get phone calls all day of people not wanting to say what they wanted. Mm. So we had lots of like, do you guys sell magazines?
Do you guys have a Soldier of Fortune? Good, good, good. And Catcher in the Rye? Good, 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 good. The Playgirl issue. Do you have the Playgirl issue?
Yeah. And just the second they say, do you carry magazines? You'd be like, I know where this is going. Do you have Adulter magazines?
Oh my God.
Do you have like Playboy and magazines that are like it? Like, Just say it.
I wish you would have taken pictures on that day and just have an article called "The Sweatiest Women of August 3rd, 1997."
It was great. It was like all kinds of women coming in for this thing. Eventually, we finally sold out. We had to put up a sign.
What kind of lumber is Brad Pitt swinging?
Well, it's also
perfectly average.
Perfectly average.
Well, you don't know if he's a grower or a shower.
It's true.
Exactly.
He is not aroused. Nobody
wants a boner on the beach.
Yeah, yes, but you can't tell from
he's in incredible shape.
He's in great shape back then. He was still so cute.
I remember on the Daily Show they talked about this and they showed the picture of it, and then they had like tweezers holding a pea over his penis just to be like, this is how we obscure it.
That's wonderful. Did Playgirl just fold?
Yeah, they folded and they came back briefly, then they folded. I'm sorry that I can't. I should look up and tell
your subscription.
I want to read that article.
See where it stands.
Yeah, I got to tell you where that article was because it was in Esquire. That's Esquire. Right. It was in Esquire, I think, last month.
I wonder if you started in Esquire in 1997, you knew this is what you'd be covering.
Yeah, just the idea of it being like a lifestyle magazine for women. Also, here's some naked dudes.
Women like stereos, right?
Yeah, just like Playboy. Let's get some columnists.
Single panel comics about rape. Yeah. Oh, that probably won't work in Playgirl, will it?
No. Well, they would talk about, latest birth control issues and whatever. And also, here's a naked dude, or here's a dude just wearing a tuxedo shirt and no pants.
Yeah, hope you like hair.
Playgirl, you'll never believe this, but it happened to me.
How would those stories be on Playgirl? So 16 guys hit on me tonight.
But not too aggressively.
1997 movies. I have never heard of most of these.
Wow.
Traveler, Bill Paxton, Mack Wahlberg, and Julianna Margulies.
This is an underrated movie.
Really?
Yeah. It's a tiny indie about Irish traveler con men, basically. Bill Paxton, Mackie Mack. He's still Mackie Mack.
Mackie Mack.
And they're, they're very clannish, and some of them are con men, and some of them are cool, and Bill Paxton's...
I like movies about
con men.
Falls
for an inside, falls for an outsider,
made me think of
and
In
stuff.
Bruges, immediately.
Yeah, it's nice to see Bill Paxton have a leading role. Whenever he does, he just fucking
shines.
You're right,
that's why we watched Twister, because, he didn't have a lot of leading roles, actually.
No,
very good, a very dependable supporting player in anything you put him in.
Yeah, that's a good one. I recommend it.
Career Girls... Ain't never heard of that, but it doesn't sound like it's for me.
It's a Mike Lee joint, which means it's going to be depressed people talking.
Okay.
But not one of his better known depressed people talking movies.
I see.
One of the top billed people for some reason is Andy Serkis.
Really?
So if you want to see him outside of Monkey Motion Capture.
Yeah.
He didn't become the motion capture man till Gollum.
It was Jude, by the production of those movies, he was about to start those films because of how long they took to shoot.
Yeah, that's true.
Somebody is passing money to Peter Jackson right now to make Lord of the Rings to come
out in 2001. Stalking the New Line right now, trying to get $100 million.
Holy shit. And Free Willy 3, The Rescue.
It took him three movies to rescue him. God damn it.
I really thought the first movie tied everything
together. Oh, Willy's been captured again.
At this point, it's pretty much what the plot is. I'm surprised it's a theatrical film, to be honest. I would have figured.
For real. Yeah. Especially if, even Michael Madsen says no. Why do you still make the movie?
Yeah, we got one Lost Boys in the movie theaters and three Free Willies.
Yeah.
What kind of universe is this?
I have not seen this. Def Jam's How to Be a Player.
I'm what you might call a player.
10 o'clock, Katrina.
Hi.
2 o'clock, Amber.
Man, that girl is persuasion.
You mean Caucasian.
4 o'clock, Robin.
Oh.
4:05, Robin's husband.
This is smart.
Man.
Whoa.
No.
Just a...
Whoa.
How is his wiener still functioning?
I'm a fucking gum day, my dog.
That's how much of a player he is. It's sort of a romantic comedy. He meets a girl that he decides to convince him to not be a player anymore, I believe.
I don't know. Maybe it's just sex. It's just an hour and a half of fucking, I don't know.
It's Rock and Jock MVP Bill Bellamy right there.
Yep.
He was an MTV VJ first, right? And then this is kind of his biggest role. Yeah. And it's under the Def Jam brand, even. So it's
That's
kind of
nuts.
An extension of the Def Jam comedy.
And Def Jam is a...
The 90s.
It feels so dated. We just talked about a major magazine, but a record label.
Yeah.
Branching out into music and eventually video games.
Well, in 97 as well, like you didn't get to make films starring a primarily black cast unless you had somebody behind you like that, or Quincy Jones, you know?
Yeah. And I always liked Bill Bellamy. He started as an MTV VJ, right?
Yeah, he's a fun guy.
One of the only people to like branch out into other shit.
But I also, I mean, Bernie Mac being in this, that just shows you too. It's Def Comedy Jam adjacent film.
Also a rare movie outing by Lark Voorhees, Lisa Turtle from Saved by the Bell.
That's right. Yeah she's she has problems.
But, yeah.
Inarguably the biggest movie of this week.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry Fletcher has theories.
The whole Vietnam War was fought over a bet that Howard Hughes lost to Aristotle Onassis.
Some would call his theories crazy.
You're telling me that NASA is going to kill the President of the United States with an earthquake?
Not exactly the kind of thing a Secret Service agent can, like, just throw himself on top of.
He writes them in his newsletter.
This is our third issue this year. Conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy theory!
Says the title, he wins the movie!
Did well. Mel Gibson really going outside of his wheelhouse to be a crazy person.
Yeah,
but
sort of.
It's so weird scene.
He is so... First of all,
this
too attractive.
Really good movie. I
too,
like this movie.
Too clean cut to be a crazy lone gunman cab driver.
Is, well, because
have
Julia
you ever
Roberts
had a
has
cab
to watch
driver?
A kiss him.
Yeah. Have you ever had a cab driver half as attractive as Mel Gibson on a bad day?
Well, now that we've got Uber and Lyft,
okay, maybe. Now.
But
maybe.
Man, yeah, Mel Gibson, the guy who got angry he didn't get a blowjob in a jacuzzi, is playing like I'm this down to earth,
his finest role,
conspiracy theorist, guy.
He is a guy whose brain was broken by the FBI.
It was, and
I think that's the secret. The secret is most conspiracies are true.
The plot, I think, the story of the film is that he's a guy who chronicles all these wingnut conspiracies, but he gets one right on accident.
Right.
And they think he has more information than he does. And it took South Park to point this out to me. But Mel Gibson is brutally tortured, usually nude, in every single movie he's in. And this, other than Braveheart, is the most notorious of it, because he's got shit hooked up to his balls and really gets the shit kicked out of him.
Worse than Lethal Weapon with the car battery.
This one's real
bad. Worse than Payback with the hammer
and
his feet.
Smashes feet. Oh, well, this sexualizes it more with the ball torture, which you would also do in Braveheart. But this, I think this was a Richard Donner film, wasn't it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, let me double check this.
It is a Richard Donner film.
Yeah.
It is?
Gosh. That's also why I was into this movie, because it brought back together Richard Donner, Lethal Weapon.
That meant something.
With Mel Gibson. And
Patrick Stewart is the bad guy?
He is the bad guy. He's got a mustache in it, I believe. It's kind of distracting.
Julia Roberts, we should say, is still at this point the biggest actress in the world.
This did introduce me to many conspiracy theories that were like, again... Conspiracy theories were more fun before 9/11, at least to me. It was more innocent, though obviously the conspiracies of like presidential assassinations are not, they're not,
well, it's
not dark.
It's just the internet at one point simultaneously wiped out conspiracy theories because everything was researchable and everything was accountable. And in the last couple of years, the internet is the basis for every single uncorroborated.
It just proliferated more. Instead of having like seven master conspiracy theories, it says like, well, you each have a dozen for whatever whatever your political persuasion
Everything's
is.
Everything's a real conspiracy until Alex Jones apologizes.
until a yogurt company sues you.
And this is, I remember, The Catcher in the Rye.
Yes.
I'd never heard before, but I think this movie doesn't seem that memorable. I don't see it airing anymore, anyone talk about it. But everybody was finally aware of the Catcher in the Rye conspiracy, which was a real thing.
Mm-hmm. I also remember he points out the, like, how come we know the three, Lee Harvey Oswald and all the people who try to kill presidents have three names, except for Sirhan Sirhan, unless his middle name's Sirhan as well. I also remember that to show how kooky he is, in his fridge, everything is in a locked canister, so he knows nobody has tampered with it. Yes.
Which is just toxic narcissism. I love conspiracy people like that.
Yeah, I know. That's one of those things that drives me nuts with like conspiracy, like the people, and unfortunately a lot of it has to do with mental illness and schizophrenia and stuff like that. But it's like, why do you think the CIA is after
you?
Specifically, what information could they have?
Because I sell used cars, man. Cars make the world go round, man. Fossil fuels. The CIA wants to know everything about me.
Do you know how many man hours they would have to put into spying on you 24/7 while you like go down to the Walgreens and then you like got to go to the post office? And it's like they're spending a lot of money just watching you be a schmuck.
And they explain silent black helicopters in this too, which nobody talks about anymore.
Because I remember watching this movie with my friend. He's like, you know, those really exist. I'm like, they do. And I have thought that to this day. Do they? Because it's a helicopter making helicopter noises, and like Patrick Stewart flips a switch, and the whole helicopter goes silent. And my friend told me that was real.
Well,
like a hoverboard, I believed him.
Now it's just cameras everywhere. Even if it was a silent black helicopter, you'd still see it.
Yes.
I believe they're called drones now.
My grandmother and I call them heavenicopters because you don't say the word hell. Anyway, we'll move into 1997 TV.
On Fox, there's a two-night event on August 5th and August 6th. Dean Koontz's Intensity airs on TV.
I remember this.
It's horrifying. I rewatched it. It is some scary-ass shit.
Really?
So it is a serial killer movie, but really about getting in the mind of a serial killer who he murders this family, except this girl. Well, this girl watches him murder this family, and then she kind of follows him, and then he captures her, and then talks with her on the way to murdering her, just to get to know her, and they just have this kind of exchange. It's really creepy, and especially when I watched some scenes, it was like, how is this even on Fox? Like, this is some creepy stuff. And it's played, the serial killer is played by John C. McGinley.
Yeah.
And
full of cum.
And the victim, or his main victim, is Molly Parker, who played Alma Garrett on Deadwood.
Yay.
That's who it was. Mm-hmm. And so here's just a very creepy scene of John C. McGinley threatening her while she's chained up.
Here's how it goes. I'm going to kill you anyway, all right? I don't know how yet. It'll probably be in front of Arielle, because she's seen bodies before. That's not that big a deal. But she's never been there for the moment itself, for that last haunting gasp. As far as you go, you know, I don't know. There are a lot of things I enjoy doing. I could either do them while you're alive, or I can wait until after you're dead. If you'll just cooperate with me, I'll wait until after you're dead. What do you say?
You're 6'7", bitch.
Oh, come on.
That's incredible.
That seems funny when you hear McGinley say it, but it's a creepy. So, yes, he then, very soon after that, he will threaten to keep cutting up her face until she answers him, and he's like, you're gonna go crazy halfway through me cutting up your face. I know this is like, boy, this is some fucked up shit for TV.
A lot funnier when he said all the same stuff to Zach Braff. Yeah.
It's the same kind of speech he gives in Scrubs. Yes, it really is. But don't worry, kids, he burns to death at the end of the movie, and
thank goodness.
And she saves Ariel. Is this girl, this little girl he's been keeping captive, who he just wants to keep showing corpses to. So he frees her. Alma Garrick frees her too. It's fucked up, man. And this was a two-night event, like a 4-hour movie on Fox.
Stay tuned, Simpsons fans.
All your kids are home from school.
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's fucked up.
Well, in much lighter TV.
Yes.
Jesus. August 8th, Garth Brooks ropes the wind of Central Park. Broadcast on HBO to a crowd of almost a million people.
Yeah. Somewhere between 600,000 and 900,000 people in Central Park. It's the largest concert that's ever been in Central Park.
Was he hanging up his... Was he threatening to hang up his hat and at this point? Like,
Chris Gaines? No.
Gaines hadn't happened yet.
I remember him saying he was retiring. Like,
yeah,
while he was
done that.
I don't remember
times.
If it was this time, because it's like...
I don't think so.
If this was promoted as the last Garth Brooks concert, it stands to reason a million people would show up to a free show.
No, I think this is just... This is when it's like at the height
big,
of popularity, really. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he was selling like easily 4 million copies of albums all the time. And so
I had him.
He could go to Central Park and just. Mm. But if you're like in the, if you're all the way in the back, what even are you getting out of that?
I can almost see the speaker. But man, the song we're gonna close out with, I know it very well. Ain't going down till the sun comes up.
Yeah.
I ain't giving in till I get enough. This is a very rare period. I had a ton of country albums because of Garth Brooks. I remember he had like two or three in the top 10.
Yes, a lot of great, you know, country rock crossover type stuff. I will say, trying to find Garth Brooks shit online is impossible.
Really?
They have scrubbed that shit from YouTube amazingly well.
Really?
You put in, you know.
It's like the Country Prince.
Yes, it really is. It's like you put in any song title you can think of and video. You're not going to find the video. You're not going to find the song uploaded. Maybe you'll find someone doing a cover of it.
What the fuck
you
is
cannot
that?
Find Garth. Nowhere.
I remember holders,
it stood out to me a few months ago. I walked into a Target around Christmas, I think, and I see the ultimate Garth Brooks box set. I'm like, this is a crazy big package for $100. What the fuck is it? And I look at it and like, this doesn't even have Roping in the Wind or The Chase on it. What the hell? How does this make it ultimate? Has all the doesn't have the very albums I know as a non Garth Brooks fan. But I don't know. Maybe there's some weird litigious thing with Garth Brooks' music.
Just, they're very protective of it, I guess.
I'm more of a Chris Gaines man. I don't know. I don't know.
To that end, we're a very fair use of this closing out the segment.
Yes.
We'll be playing under 15 seconds of it. Don't worry. Please don't follow us.
We will head out of 97 with no games to speak of, but a live version of Ain't Going Down Till the Sun Comes Up by Garth Brooks. But when we get back, people, we'll talk about 2007.
Mr. and Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And for the week of August 4th to 10th, we got some good picks. Not quite as great as In the Heat of the Night from last week, but we got some good ones. 75 years ago this week, August 1942, we had Tales of Manhattan. Every now and then, I feel like maybe every 10 years we make one of these movies where it's just like a ton of stars in doing like small bits throughout a larger movie. This one's, I mean, classic Hollywood at its finest. I mean, we got Charles Boyer, Rita Hayworth, Ginger Rogers, Henry Fonda, Charles Laughton, Edward G. Robinson, Paul Robeson. I mean, it's just, it's one of those like, oh, everyone gets a scene. So it's fun if you're into classic stuff. Also we've got Pardon My Sarong with Abbott and Costello and A Hauntin' We Will Go with Laurel and Hardy. They were contemporaneous somehow. Anyway, then 50 years ago this week, 1967, we've got the first Pink Floyd album debuts, Piper at the Gates of Dawn. It's the only one that's got original member Syd Barrett in it, who became kind of a crazy person recluse. I think Shine On Your Crazy Diamonds about him. I listened to it last night, and it's way more 67 psychedelic kind of early Who than I was expecting from Pink Floyd, but I'm sure if you're into Pink Floyd, you've already heard it a million times. I know Pink Floyd fans are very, very rabid. But if you're into like psychedelia, I'd actually give it a try. Piper at the Gates of Dawn. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
I am swooning right now because we're coming in with
and
Jonas Brothers
you.
SOS. Oh,
I'm
going
to throw my panties.
I love you, Greg Jonas. I love you.
Yeah, the Jonas Brothers were kind of just an invented Disney band. They made them big, and they were being sold as sexual, as heartthrobs to girls, but also with their promise rings with light Christianity to let them know that they're staying abstinent.
That's why they call me the promise breaker. Going around sexing up a bunch of Jonas Brothers fans. That's ridiculous, but when we write this little piece of Disney history, this is the end of modern music as a business was already afoot, and Disney kept it alive through means like this for a much longer time. When we discussed the highest selling albums of all time, there's like 2 years where they're just High School Musical and Jonas Brothers stuff. Like Disney is single handedly keeping the physical music business afloat.
We'll be talking about High School Musical soon.
Oh boy!
But yeah, the Disney was awesome at that marketing stuff, but even now that's just done. They can't, like, they gotta sell different shit to kids. They can't sell music.
Article I read about it, like, they are losing everything to YouTube. Like, their whole audience has abandoned them for YouTube, and they're trying their best to pluck people from YouTube to put them on the Disney Channel, and it's not working.
It's a losing effort, man. It's the medium, not the stars. Like, that's how kids just want to see people on YouTube talking to them.
Yeah. But that's Hey There Delilah by Plain White Tees is still numero uno. You got new releases. Full Circle by Drowning Pool. This is not the bodies hitting the floor at all.
No, it's not that album.
This has to be like
their
lead singer was already dead, wasn't he?
I think this is their return from his death.
Yeah. Angels and Devils by Fuel. I used to like Fuel quite a bit. Nine Lives by Cat DeLuna and the stage names by Ockerville River.
That's a really good band.
I like think then. Yeah.
I didn't. I think Lyle Landley sold monorails there. the real Testament by Piles. Man, I feel so out of it when it comes to music. Don't
every 2007 section makes me feel very old and out of touch.
Well,
yes.
I knew Hey There, Delilah. I knew that one. I guess I'm revealing coming out as white.
Probably
officially.
Had, you know, an ad for Volkswagen with it or something, you old bastard.
I had satellite radio at this point. I was listening to lots of new music, but more like Arcadia Fire kind of stuff on satellite radio. 2007 news, Barry Bonds breaks Hank Aaron's home run record.
Yeah, here's the moment it happened.
And Bonds hits one high, hits it deep!
It was nice this year in San Francisco. I wish it had been a splash hit, though, into the water. I love those.
Yeah. Somebody knocked over someone in a kayak.
Also wish he hadn't been roided up.
Well, so
that's what I was about to ask
you. That's the other thing.
Right. Were these allegations, they were happening
while
this was happening?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have two feelings on this, and Dave and I are both the biggest baseball fans here. But so my first feeling is that I grew up in Atlanta in my biggest baseball time. And Hank Aaron is a god there, a living god for breaking the home run record. If you're not a racist, you love Hank Aaron for breaking
Mark
the
McGuire, man. No one else did anything.
But so he broke Babe Ruth's seemingly unbreakable home run record. And people always wondered, like, will that actually be broken in my generation? Like,
wait,
could
was
that
it
happen?
Babe Ruth or was it?
It was Babe Ruth.
It was Babe's, yeah.
Which was Mickey Mantle. It was during a season.
That was a season, the 61.
Right. No, that was Roger Maris.
Mickey Mantle competed with
him. Right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But these are long, long times in between these records. It's kind of astonishing.
Decades. Yeah. It was with the Atlanta Braves, so the Atlanta Braves were very proud of him breaking the record with them, too. So he was an Atlanta legend. Cut to, 2007 or 2006. Barry Bonds is hitting them all the time. Yeah. He is clearly on pace to break the record. But everybody is noticing the very obvious signs that he is a monster man who is much huger than he was.
It is not. I was not paying attention to baseball at all. But I collected baseball cards in the mid-80s. Barry Bonds was a sought-after baseball card in Topps, Fleer, Upper Deck. I was buying all that shit. I love the cards. Wasn't really watching that much baseball. And I heard about the Barry Bonds controversy. I'm like, I don't have an opinion.
Yeah.
And then I saw it on the news. I'm like, how is this a mystery? I know what Barry Bonds looks like. This is Hulk.
It bothered me how obvious it was.
Yeah, it's 20 years after what I knew him as, and he's so much bigger. Yeah.
His head is huger. He's like, it's not just the signs of somebody getting bulkier. It's the signs of clear human
in his
growth.
40s.
That's it. Like, he had the talent like back in the 80s. Was like home run hitter back then, like more in the vein of Daryl Strawberry, where it's like a tall, lanky guy with a lot of strength. But when you're in your 40s and you still have that strength, there's probably a reason. And it's,
not have that strength, have more strength.
Yes.
And so it
got bigger and stronger.
So it angered me that such an obvious cheater by the rules of the game he's playing is going to break Hank Aaron's record. And then to be here in San Francisco and just that everybody just were like, we got plausible deniability. Who knows? Yeah. I don't know.
This is also weird because, like, I think at this point I'm in San Francisco for like 7 or 8 months. Uh-huh. And most of the season, people in the city could not give a shit about the Giants because they were terrible at this point.
I remember hearing nothing.
And I worked two blocks from the ballpark, and our sales department had season tickets, and they would always just give us they would drizzle down to the editors because nobody wants to go see the Giants. Now the Giants are way too expensive to get into, and the entire city got on the bandwagon in 2010, 2012, 2014.
The best defense I've seen, I'm going to be devil's advocate here, the best defense I've seen of it is, one, everybody does it, so him doing steroids it's relatively an even playing field.
My only other modern association is Sosa and McGuire, and they were all...
Have you seen Sammy Sosa, by the way?
Well, they all kind of disappear from the public eye once they retire, because it's like, steroids
shamed.
Anymore, I'm going to shrivel up.
Yeah, well... Sammy Sosa is now seriously, he is white skin. Like, he is, it's very strange. But anyway, but everybody was doing steroids. Not everybody was breaking records. Mm-hmm. He was breaking, if it was so easy to do steroids and break the home run record, somebody else would have done it.
Huh.
And he is playing against pitchers who are also on steroids.
That's the argument of fashioning documentary bigger, better, faster, stronger. It's like steroid is not a fucking Marvel device that you inject in your body and become strong. It only works in conjunction with a shitload of exercise, working out.
Yeah.
So some of this is Bonds.
Barry. Bonds did it, but it's just that also, like, he had really no shame about it, and he's also just, he was a weird-ass figure. Like, just, he's a strange man who is clearly going through, like, some mental issues from his
youth. Yeah, he had, like, a reality show around this time, too.
We talked about it last year on it, but everybody pretended that wasn't happening when he broke the record. They're just like, it's awesome.
Yeah.
There were baseball fans at the time who were just like, Hank Aaron, you should not even... Hank Aaron did a video message of congratulations of it, even though tons of people were just like, don't do it, man. Yeah. He's not, you know, this is wrong. Like, don't do it.
It's also going from Hank Aaron, who's like a hero in Atlanta and like played during a more tumultuous time and was just like
getting death threats for daring to break the white man's record.
And, and by all accounts, like a good guy.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then you get Barry Bonds, who's like, I hate reporters and I'm not to do this and I'm going to be on a reality show, but I hate it.
So
and blah,
why don't,
blah, blah.
Next to his home run record, instead of an asterisk, we just put like the muscle emoji.
Yeah.
I wish it was Ken Griffey Jr. who had that record.
Yeah, but he drank all that tonic and it made his head too big.
Does he still hold the record 10 years later?
Bonds? Yeah. Yep, hasn't been broken. I forget what the final tally was.
Yeah, not that much more. It's like 780 or something.
I don't remember him playing on the Giants.
He ran out of gas at the end of the season. Huh. No pun intended.
And yeah, now it's just like, it's just something you accept. Like, yep, the guy who's got it is... did steroids and but it's enhancing a sport, and if everybody could do it, then fine, who cares?
Yeah,
but
I
do worry about, like, it is their health too, like what if it comes to be, if you just allow everything, then they're just dropping like flies because they're all doing the worst thing.
I'm like this close to be like, fuck it, let them do what they want.
That's someone who doesn't watch sports, Diana, I'm like the exact same way. Let the mutants do what they need to do in order to make it the most entertaining. I don't fuck steroids, add trampolines. I don't give a shit. Make this more interesting.
You want Rock and Jock baseball?
Yeah, we could have two leagues, you know, we can have the clean league and the whatever league.
Is a story, Diana. I love that.
Yeah,
the clean league winning like once every 10 years. That would make baseball way more amazing. But I guess we got to move into movies, even though looking at this list, I don't want to.
No way.
It's not compared that bad. Compared to 87 and even 97, it's a weak.
But in 2007, what is this again? Ugh. August 4th through the 10th.
Ugh, this movie.
Daddy Day Camp. Fresh off the Oscar.
The sequel to Daddy Day Care?
Yes. Daddy Day Care. Yes. Eddie Murphy couldn't be bothered. Nope. Cuba Gooding Jr., Oscar winner. Cuba Gooding Jr.
The movie begins with him. I remember a review saying, like, Oscar winner Cuba Gooding Jr. starts his movie being peed on by a baby. Like, it doesn't get better for him.
Directed by Fred Savage.
Wow.
Oh, that's right.
I didn't know he directed that many movies.
He's a cool guy.
He directs a ton of television.
A big fish fan.
Man, I decided just to leave out the trailer, not put it in here, but...
No. I can't imagine it.
I mean, it's exactly what you imagine, but except that it starts with, from the studio that brought you Daddy Daycare. And it's like,
nobody came along?
Are you fucking kidding me? Not one, like, a caterer came.
From the country that brought you this movie.
From the same brand of celluloid that brought you Daddy Daycare.
It's like, I looked it up. You could still say, from the studio that brought you Zero Dark 30. It's like, never trust a movie that says that, ever.
Wow, because I even, like, roll my eyes and I say, from the producers of blank. Like, I don't care who the money business assholes are.
That's a step beyond producer.
Wow. From the studio. But this is notable. I don't totally dislike this series.
We are at war, right here in my own city. A dozen agents from the French secret police have already been murdered. It's the largest criminal organization in the world.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
You never touched a black man's radio.
Well, this is, they're in the backseat in a French taxi.
Right. Okay, so Max von Sydow and Roman Polanski in Rush Hour 3.
Rush Hour 3.
I had no idea because I can't stand Chris Tucker. So I've seen most of Rush Hour 1, not any of 2 and 3. And then I'm the one who gets the trailers. And it opens with Max von Sydow, and then it goes to Roman Polanski doing doing an anal cavity search joke. And I'm like, What am I looking at?
Oh, good God.
I've had a stroke. Someone call 911.
Well,
can only do it in other countries now.
Yeah. I was a big Jackie Chan fan, so I enjoyed the first Rush Hour, but it was full of jokes of like, Jackie Chan doesn't know you shouldn't say the N-word that other black people call each other. Like, moments like that. And also, never touch a black man's radio. That
As a Jackie Chan fan, this is a legitimate question. Did it better bridge the Hong Kong films than some of the other Jackie Chan solo stuff?
Well,
I feel like the first one does.
Rumble in the Bronx introduced him to a whole new audience, but this also crossed him over into the urban audience that Rush Hour did. Like, it did gain him a ton of new fans thanks to working with Chris Tucker while Chris Tucker was a very popular stand-up. And then they do the sequel where they go to Hong Kong, so it's flipped. Now the stranger in the strange land is Chris Tucker. And then in this one, I guess they go to Paris for a middle ground, but... Yeah. There had been talks of them tried to make Rush Hour 3 for years and couldn't because Chris Tucker was like, I don't want to do anything. Like, he was tired of being famous.
Looked it up. This is the third movie Chris Tucker made in the middle of a 15-year period where he made three movies, all of which start with Rush and end with Hour.
He only did that. Doesn't he want to be famous? It's very Dave Chappelle thing of like, why'd he quit? He must be crazy.
He's coming to my town and playing FAMU and like playing sold out comedy shows. So he clearly likes being a funny person, but didn't want to do Friday. Didn't want to do Rush Hour anymore.
Like, for the longest time, the only thing he would appear in was like Michael Jackson music videos and Michael Jackson court cases.
Yep.
Like,
the only thing he appeared in between. With the Rush Hours.
And he got cast in that. Michael Jackson asked him to do it because he does a Michael Jackson dance in the Rush Hour film. So he's like, hey, you're a fan of mine.
I thought I would hate Chris Tucker because I love Friday. I went and saw Money Talks day one in the theater. Fifth Element kind of annoying. I was annoyed because I can't see this dude every fucking 8 months. And it turns out maybe he knew that. Maybe you don't have to, because in hindsight, Chris Tucker wasn't anywhere near as omnipresent and bothersome as I thought he was going to be.
He got paid a shitload of money to come back because
I love Jackie Chan. Mm-hmm. I feel like I should give these a try. I feel like my annoyance at Chris Tucker has waned a bit over the years, but it's like I can take him in small doses.
Rewatching Fifth Element, this is an inimitable dude. Nobody else can be Chris Tucker.
And I do think he's talented in his own weird niche, but it's just like. It's a little too much for me. Small doses, love them.
Well, I didn't see three, but the problem with them is Jackie Chan films, the Rush Hour films, is that they are filmed by Brett Ratner, who doesn't know how to film Jackie Chan. Mm-hmm. They are not fun action. There's too many edits.
Yeah.
He doesn't get to do cool stunts, but he also got Jackie when Jackie's like, it hurts to be me. I want to go to America and be hurt a little less.
There's a really good, Every Frame a Painting?
Yeah.
Where they point out, with Jackie Chan movies, especially when he was, the director or producer on a movie, he would be like, we're going to do this 100 times because it's going to be on film forever. Whereas, in this, it's just we cut them together.
Don't pull away from the hit because you're too afraid for an actor to get hit. Get professionals in there who can not know how not to hurt people. and the shots are amazing. I don't know. That is a really good essay, by the way. Every Frame of Painting.
Yeah.
Great YouTube channel.
So, blech. I did not care for Rush Hour 3.
They did well. I think they constantly talk about rebooting it, and I think there might have been a show that's already been out about Rush Hour.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I remember
reading news about that.
Yeah. Maybe I'm getting confused with the Lethal Weapon TV show.
Yeah, which has to be canceled by now. This is weird because I totally forgot about this film, and it's pretty okay.
Oh, I love this movie. Yeah. Well, I didn't love the movie.
A star has fallen.
All great epics.
When I find out, all of us shall be young again.
Begin with an adventure.
Touché.
But this August...
Careful how much magic you use. It's beginning to show.
You've never seen one.
Everyone's talking about fallen star.
Fight like this.
Enough.
Stardust.
The movie otherwise known as Cody Rhodes.
So I read the book, and I was a big fan of the book.
It was Neil Gaiman's book.
It was his attempt at a fable. Well, not an attempt. It was his modern day fable kind of thing. But
he
has
a lot
like
Princess Bride with a lot of actors I previously recognized. Mm.
Yeah, and it's a fun little adventure starring famous actors, and that Michelle Pfeiffer. So a star falls, but it turns out the star is a living thing. It's a being. And so
it's a Claire Danes.
It's a Claire Danes. And everybody wants to kidnap her to steal shit from her, like to steal immortality or trials. Whatever. That's especially Michelle Pfeiffer wants to steal immortality from her. The children of Peter O'Toole want to steal her to claim the kingdom. The person who gets the star will be the king. Pirates want her at some point too. And then meanwhile, the dude in the movie wants to get the star because he's
Daredevil.
Because the girl, he wants to get
only
her.
The thing I've ever seen him in.
Because the woman in town, he wants to marry her, and it'll be his dowry getting the star. But then he falls in love with her, and he becomes a hero without expecting to be.
Yeah, I was surprised to see. Oh shit! It's Charlie Cox. It's Daredevil. Because I remember watching this, thinking the main guy is just a guy.
Yeah,
he's pretty generic in this.
He was hired to be generic.
Yeah,
the character
that's his job is.
It's got a great
has an incredible
Ian
cast.
McKellen narrating, and De Niro pops up, and
as a gay
Peter
pirate.
O'Toole. Yep.
Peter O'Toole,
one of his final roles.
Yep.
Jesus, but it's also the odd trajectory of one of our more visionary directors, Matthew Vaughn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'd seen Layer Cake, and I heard he was doing this, and he was on a weird trajectory because Marvel was hovering around him, like trying to get him to make X-Men films. And he seemed to be of two weird minds about it. Like, he wants to, he doesn't want to. He rebooted that franchise when I thought it was unrebootable with First Class. Great.
After choosing not to make three after working on three.
Yes, leaving the series again to make more comic book movies.
Yes.
Which are, if you have not seen The Kingsman, I think it's one of the best examples of a comic book movie in fucking years. I can't wait for that sequel. I have a feeling it's going to bomb horribly.
Oh, yeah.
Planning to kick ass after this.
Yeah, and kick ass. He made kick ass as well.
Well, Stardust is also comic book adjacent because it got a comic book adaptation. It is by Neil Gaiman, who at the time was still seen as a comic book writer.
Not based on Neil Gaiman comic.
It was a book, prose book, but that had art in it by Charlie Vess, who was one of his constant collaborators in comics, and eventually it got adapted into a comic. But yeah, this is when now Neil Gaiman is an author. Like, his comic books are long behind him.
Norse Gods, I believe, is his latest book.
American Gods got adapted, but he's done a ton of books. But yeah, this was one of the. We probably wouldn't have American Gods if this hadn't been a success. The film Stardust. Ricky Gervais is in it as well.
Matthew Vaughn. The second I saw Layer Cake, like, I'm interested in anything this dude does, and I have never seen a person back away from more high profile projects to make seemingly what he seems to want to make comic book movies exclusively.
Yeah.
I want to revisit this. I just don't remember being wowed by it.
I was just sort of mid by it. I mean, it's sort of like, I feel like I saw this somewhere around the same time I saw Golden Compass. And so, like, they sort of joined in my head of like, well, it's a fantasy world. There's a flying ship and there's some lore. But one of them is really boring, and one of them just sort of was like, well, that was pleasant.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume this is the, well, that was pleasant.
It's Golden Compass sucks. This is perfectly pleasant.
Peter O'Toole is in it, and when I saw it, I thought, Peter O'Toole is going to be dead soon. He lived a few more years after this movie.
Okay.
Did.
I only remember, I saw this in the theater on a date, but I can't remember with who, so... I can only surmise that I was probably too nervous to remember much of the movie.
Welcome to another tiny piece of the Diamond Dog Thousand Puzzle. So many dates you can't remember the girls.
No, like, I can tell you, like, in the summer of 2007, I was not in a relationship, so I was probably like, oh, I went on a date with this girl for like 2 or 3 weeks, and then that was it.
I don't understand modern dating. Been with the same girl too long.
And this was like the Craigslist dating era where it's like, first, let's make sure we're not murderers. Then we send pictures.
Right.
And then we meet at a bar.
All right, show me your closet. No bodies. Okay, okay.
What's in your trunk? Duct tape. I don't know. That could have a couple of uses.
The last date I went on a movie that wasn't my girlfriend was fucking 300, which is just... What the hell? Or that or Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie. But moving out, that's a good segue into television, isn't it?
Sure.
Didn't I do that accidentally in an amazing way?
God, TV is the worst.
I'm trying to stall.
I just have a lot of reality shows to talk about in this one. The first one is August 5th, the final episode of The Simple Life airs. It had been moved to the E! Network at this point. The last 2 years were on the E! Network.
Was a white-hot phenomenon for a brief second.
In case you don't know, it was rich celebutards, as they were called, mocked at the time.
Never heard that.
You never heard that?
No.
Yeah, well, it was celebutards.
I don't remember what David Cross said about him.
But the Nicole Richie and Paris Hilton, and they're just...
They're stupid.
The demand of the show is that dumb rich girls go to hang out with disgusting normal people. And they just go, ew. And it's it was about making them suffer on screen. And they just wanted to be famous. It was rich children wanted to be famous. So they pitch a reality show like, well, you'd be famous if you were on this show where you're tortured. Yeah. So
I don't fully understand why people watch these. Because seemingly, when I remember people watching this, it was because you didn't like these girls. Yeah. They were snotty C words that you wanted to hate and see bad things happen to. Yeah. But they did, not Nicole Richie, but Paris Hilton spun this into real legitimate fame.
Well, Nicole Richie, like, she's doing comedies now. Yeah. Like, she's a genuine actress.
Not really.
I don't know.
Yeah. But by the time this last episode aired on E!, it actually came with the announcement, like, we're not doing more of this. Like, Paris... They came back together for one last season after like a couple years off.
Yeah. I imagine at this point they hated each other.
They had rekindled their friendship, and then after this they're just like, this is too much work. Aww. And so they did this last episode. A year later, E! Would try to redo the show with Kelly Osbourne in it, but she, after a few days of filming, she's like, this is degrading and I'm not doing this. And she just quit.
She seems too smart for this.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But I don't know.
I thought I would say that, but it's true.
Dave, you have the intro to it here?
Yeah.
That's hot. You take two girls,
they go to camp.
All right, they said the words. Can we stop it?
Let's
stop
it. She's eating a worm.
Yeah.
You watch it to see rich kids suffer and say it's the same.
I don't know that for sure, though.
Yeah,
with the Kardashian era in that app, I think this is something people are aspiring to.
Yeah. There's some of both. Yeah, I think it's both. I think there's some people that think, like, this is like having a really hot, famous friend. And I'm going to be like her. I'm going to get a dog and then put it in my purse and then shit in my purse. And then I have to reach in for my wallet and my keys. Oh my God, there's shit in there. How could you do that, princess? And then there's everyone else who is like, yeah, let's watch these stupid bitches hurt.
Yeah.
I want him to see it break a bone. Compound fractures or GTFO.
Like, the first few seasons are them with, like, families. And it's like, they're making fun of these, like, Midwestern or whatever families. And it's like, this isn't fun.
Yeah.
These people are not that, you know.
Well, and speaking of making fun of the disadvantage, so August 6th on Court TV, Bait Car premieres.
Oh, God.
Go away, Bait Car.
But it's a very specialized version of Cops here's the intro to explain what Bait Car is. So Bait Car is a thing that cops do. Called entrapment, but it is something where they set up a car in an area where cars are getting broken into that is meant to be stolen, and then the doors will immediately lock, the windows will lock, and they can shut it down, and they can follow you, and then they catch the person in there, and so it's a rather exploitative show of just like a person. We caught this person in a car. Hey, what you doing? Oh, you thought you'd get away with it, and just hearing voiceover of like, this guy thought he could get away with it.
Yep.
And it's also, every person in it is African American, so it makes you feel like, is this demeaning of people here that you just keep showing this?
Like, I know,
like, every
being two minds about entrapment, if you're creating a crime that wouldn't have happened otherwise, if you didn't create a scenario.
Yeah, like, oh, a car that could be stolen is right here. And
yeah, it's like, we held a gun to this guy's daughter's head. Let's see if he'll commit murder.
it is kind of like, I feel weird that I sort of like shows like this in Cops, and I'll watch them every now and then, because it's like, You get a little snippet of someone's weird life on, like, one of the worst days.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel exploitive. But Bait Car is a little fun to try to figure out what lie are they going to tell. Whose car? They're going to say this is their cousin's car. I know it. I feel it coming.
Yeah, I just wish they didn't. I wish it had a little more heart for the.
Criminals.
They would, because this is the
treats them as garbage.
The bizarre decline of Court TV, now True TV.
Yeah.
But they eventually spun it into that, like, that tote truck show.
Yeah.
Which is the fakiest fake
so
shit that's ever been faked. so as not to make you feel terrible for real people. And the last time I saw that, I saw you know, our secret fucking server, like, Adam Carolla had a Takeshi Contractor reality show, which was pretty much like, let's get immigrants arrested with no legal help.
So this clip I find here is one of the funnier ones of a guy broke into a car and knew it was a bait car and, like, drives around with the door open because he's like, yeah, I know this has a full tank of gas. Duh, this is a bait car. Ha ha ha. But he's driving around in it to be caught. And then he's just like, well, then you knew you were going to be caught then. So this
the ultimate defense that, like, you're on bait car. You're on my YouTube channel. I stole your bait car on purpose. Smile. Look, this whole thing's a setup. Wave to the cameras.
So here's him after being caught. I do like his response.
Hands up.
How'd you know?
Because I watched the show.
Well, why'd you take the car then?
I don't know. I want to be a star, I guess.
And it looks right at the camera.
Damn, get this guy a show. He deserves it. He risked being arrested just to be on TV.
He's just so affable and fun. Yeah, dude.
I love this guy.
Yeah, like, To Catch a Predator did the same thing. Like, after I think that got too depressing, they did To Catch a Thief. And it was like, we left this iPhone out. Let's see if anybody takes it. And it's like, at that point, you're like, then
I was returning it.
I put a $50 bill in the street. Like, where's the line?
Yeah, I mean, To Catch a Predator, that is a disgusting show. I mean, it's one thing to do this off camera. It is another thing to then film it for entertainment purposes, but then be like, oh, we're helping all these people.
That's hysterical.
I
hope you got your show, sir. At least a meeting out of that.
All right, so that's Bait Car August 6th.
Bait Car.
August 7th, it's the finale of Age of Love, an NBC six-episode reality show where it's a dating show that's a little different.
Oh, no.
These women are just out of college.
I am young and deathly hot. Deal with it.
These women are old enough to be their moms.
I'm here because I want to be in love. The clock is ticking.
And pro tennis star Mark Philippoussis is dating them all.
Give me a wild ride.
He had no idea.
What? Yes, it is a reality show where he has seven kittens and seven cougars.
Jesus Christ.
He has to pick which one he wants to be with.
It's crazy to think that all the kittens now are probably moms and all the cougars are probably dead, right?
No. The kittens' ages range from 20 to 28, the cougars 39 to 48. And actually, the 48-year-old woman made it to the finals. It came down to two kittens versus one cougar. One kitten failed because she just refused to ride a plane. They're like, well, we got to ride a plane this next place. She's like,
no way.
But he picked the kitten.
One thing that kind of disturbs me.
One thing.
Is that the older ladies, the cougars, like their style, what they're wearing, their clothes, their hair is all the same as the women who were like 23. I mean, they all have sort of the beachy waves and a bunch of cleavage, and it's like, throw in someone with mom jeans. That'd be really fun.
Well, the difference is
they're way better at sex.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why you pick the older woman. No drama, and she knows her way around a dick.
Right. She knows
these young girls, all that drama.
I know. Ugh. She knows what she's doing. She knows what she wants. She gets it.
Yeah.
Bada bing, bada boom, you're out of there.
As a reality show watcher, I have to burst your bubble. There has to be a cougar at the end, because any show that is predicated on blank versus blank, there will always be one of each in the finale. I remember America's Next Top Model, they did Britain against the USA, and I'm like, all the USA models suck this year. And of course there was one at the end, and I'm like, there should have been three Britain girls, because they were way better this year.
The winner all the way. Also, I'm older than some of those cougars now.
So the winner was Amanda, age 25, who is 35 now.
Still hooking up with that tennis pro.
But it even more, actually, they were together for like 3 months and then broke up.
That's like a years for dating reality show. Most bachelorettes and bachelors don't make it that long.
Remember, marriage is sacred.
Even more disgusting the reality show, The Pickup Artist.
Oh, God.
Debuted August 6th, and let's hear the setup for this.
It is
mystery.
Fuzzy Hat Douchebag's here.
We'll not be judging you based on what I've seen today. There will be no eliminations yet. So for now, you're all safe. But after your first field test, one of you will be leaving. Right now, who you are today dies here.
Oh. Close up on the engine.
Welcome to Gamergate.
Yeah, well, this kind of is the inception of Gamergate. So the show is that pickup artist Mystery, who was the star of the book The Game about pickup artistry, he recanted
or said he
recanted? No, the guy who wrote about The Game recanted. I don't know what Mystery is up to, but that the book's about Mystery, but he didn't write it. But anyway, Mystery is really popular now, and he's trying to teach. He's given the job of teaching seven dorks how to talk to women. Yes. And so it's all these like geeks. And in this first episode, they're just coming back from him taking them to the bar and then seeing how bad they are.
Can I buy you a drink?
And so he's going to teach them the many impressive mind games he worked on to trick women into touching him.
Hey, guy. I have a suggestion. You want someone to teach you how to talk to women? Ask a woman.
But you're inhuman monsters who they must conquer. Like, oh, why would they
talk
to you?
That's right. No, I'm a vending machine that you put quarters in and push the buttons in the correct order, and then I dispense sex on you.
All this shit seems so bizarre because it operates on the myth that women don't want to fuck men, which they do. And then, and then two, but I don't know, like...
And they love it when you're mean to them.
I'm living proof. Women don't care about looks as long as you're kind of nice and like and create a comfortable environment through
kind,
which to fuck.
Respectful, funny. Yes. That's all I ask for.
So yeah, you see the show. When I see the show now,
I got laid plenty without having to incept anybody at a fucking bar.
So yeah, when I see clips of this show now, it's just like, okay, dorks who are terrified of women. They talk to a guy who basically hates women to tell them how to talk to women when. Maybe they should have talked to a woman and been put on a show where you talk to women. But
I mean, I know it's hard to talk to a woman if you think that, she's some more alien monster who can play amazing mind games on you, and you don't know what to do, and you don't know what to say, and oh my god, she's just a fucking person.
Yeah.
Dude, close your eyes, pretend she's a dude with a squeaky voice.
Yeah. Both people who where it feels good when you touch where you pee, and you're making this way too complicated.
Too complicated.
I got
and deceptful.
So yeah, this aired on VH1 for two seasons. It aired on VH1.
I meant to check in and see what the fuck VH1's identity could be in 2017. Please tell me in the comments because I have no idea.
And so pickup artists would also kind of go into the anti-pickup artist culture, which would then lead into Gamergate and Red Pilling and MRA guys because they were... guys who then said pickup artists are just trying to steal your money. I'm done with women, and then they fell even more into anger.
Wait, so I'm supposed to root for pickup artists?
I mean, over red pillars. I guess I'll pick Pua.
Dave's
guys
taking all the
there.
Wrong lessons away from this.
Yeah, no, both treat women as objects, so I'm not interested.
Yeah, no, hey, I don't want to feel anything for any of these people.
I'm taking my vagina and coming home.
No, Diana, we need it. Because we're talking about Flash Gordon. That was a terrible segue.
Yes, the only fucking non-reality show that premiered this week was on August 10th. It was Sci-Fi Channel's Flash Gordon show, which like is so bland, I didn't even want to clip to it. It's like, after the success of Battlestar Galactica, they wanted to try to reboot another thing, but it's just... It's so, like, it's down to earth and boring.
This is, like, around the time where it's like, oh, there's a new Knight Rider. There's a new Bionic Woman, I think.
Yeah,
like,
and it got savaged by critics, just destroyed by critics. And it went on for 21 episodes and then canceled. But it's, like, in the show they want it grounded, but they still have to have an enemy named Ming the Merciless. Doesn't work.
Did they included that?
Oh yeah. In the first episode, Flash Gordon, every teen who just wants to be good at street racing, guys. he's teleported.
I thought he played for the New York Jets.
No. He's teleported to another universe and held captive by Ming the Merciless, but then is freed from it and is able to teleport between the two.
In 2007, and also right now, a character being a player in the Jets is too sad.
So, yeah, Flash, they should have done the 1980 movie of Flash Gordon was much better because it realized, like, this is gay and campy and stupid. Let's be that. Like, he should be wearing lipstick. This can't be down to earth. It's Flash Gordon. It's a 1930s comic strip no one remembers.
Yes, except for George Lucas, who wanted to make it, and they wouldn't let him. Whoops-a-daisy.
I'd rather watch Flesh Gordon than Flashman.
Wow. What? Oh my goodness, is that a new thing? That
can't no, be new. Diana knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's old school porn.
All right, 07 for games. I've never played this, but I think
basically
I might.
The last Crazy Taxi game.
Crazy Taxi wow. Fare Wars for PSP. But I would say there's not a bad Crazy Taxi yeah. game.
Well,
they're
except for
really
like the
fun.
Mobile ones and shit like that. Like,
yeah,
nah.
But they're ports.
That mobile yeah. one's okay for as far as mobile free to play things go. Yeah. It's
but
fun.
It is the end of an era that didn't last that long. What I think the first Crazy Taxi is like 2000. So
yes, yeah, it was like
7 years.
Straight.
So wow. much fun, man. Yeah. 1, 2, 3 are so
yeah, 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 yeah.
Though this, at this point, they're not using Offspring.
No,
yeah,
no 7?
But it's kind of. A sequel, but kind of also like what they did with the Crazy Taxi 2 and 3, where it's like, yeah, we're going to put the old tracks on there too, because there's not a lot of depth.
It's a 2
this.
Megabyte
yeah.
download
yeah,
from
exactly.
arcades.
But yeah, this is actually notable in that I saw on the Wikipedia page, you could save your plays mm-hmm. on a, you know, that whatever fucking memory card, yeah. and then you could put it on the computer and like, upload it to the internet. It just takes
really?
Fucking like an 8-step process to do it, but hey, you could get footage of your game.
Weird.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Good on you, Crazy Taxi yeah. for PSP. The system lost to time. Well, we're wrapping up our show here, people. Mm-hmm. In case you didn't know, on patreon.com/lasertime, it supports the whole Lasertime network. And to incentivize you guys joining up and helping us out with $5, we have a comment show because we love reading your comments. I can't express that enough. The only thing special about us is that we have the microphones and you don't. Your anecdotes are just as interesting, usually more so than ours. We love comments. So leave them under the episodes. We will read them off. Highlighting Red Rock, 963. He had an anecdote related to Appetite for Destruction, which turned 30 in our July 21st to 27th episode. He says, I always have to tell this story when GNR comes up. I was 6 years old and dropped whatever I was doing when any Guns N' Roses video came on MTV. Mm-hmm. My mom bought me the cassette tape, and the only tape player I had at the time was a Teddy Ruxpin.
Oh, no.
That's
oh,
what I listened to this tape on for 2 years before I got a proper boombox. You heard that right. Imagine a 6-year-old girl walking down the street with a Teddy Ruxpin screaming Mr. Brownstone
yeah!
at the wow. its loudest its crappy little speaker could handle. It's what made me rock and roll fan today. My mom's friend also thought I was going to turn out as a horrible kid for buying me that tape, but my mother couldn't be more proud of me to this day.
Yeah.
Good on you, Mrs.
Teddy,
Red Rock.
Yes, yeah. Teddy Ruxpin, which will mouth the words to any song that's playing in it.
It'll
so.
Do its yeah. best. Yeah. And I think the tapes were a little more optimized, but it just went viral recently. Like someone just shoved a Wu-Tang tape in there and like, this is transfixing. Like a little bear.
That was a really good joke on Kimmy Schmidt this season
yeah,
of
yeah.
the Hey White Lady.
That was so fucking yes. funny. Goddamn. Hey! The malfunctioning Teddy Ruxpin. Yes. That was awesome. Because I forget what podcast we were on. You guys were, I didn't want to delay it, but I have no problem doing it now. You guys were talking about your favorite lunchbox. My parents wouldn't buy me a Teddy Ruxpin. I wanted one real bad.
Mm. Ah.
But I was allowed to have a lunchbox. So I was like, oh, that's my only Teddy Ruxpin thing.
Mm.
But we're at the end of our show. And this is, at the end of our show, we do some plugs. Mm-hmm. You can find out more at lasertimepodcast.com or 302010 specific at 302010.net. We really encourage you to leave your comments there. Also, listen to Lasertime. It's a real fun show. Topic-based, I mentioned earlier, the stingers, the things about the post-credit roll, the funniest things that have ever happened there, and now it's basically Ferris Bueller and Deadpool together. I think that both of those are amazing. Deadpool wasn't out when we recorded that episode.
Nope.
Tons of other episodes there. We got controversial songs coming up, looking at dead theme park rides if you're a fan of Universal Studios or Disney. Mm-hmm. Lasertime, check that out, and we are supported through patreon.com/lasertime for the low cost of $5. You can get an exclusive show every week where we talk about new stuff. Really long discussion, thank God, about Planet of the Apes and War of the Planet of the Apes. I was so happy to have that because that movie is very, very special to me, and I encourage everybody to check out those new movies, even if you want to steer clear of the classic ones. Other stuff that we're into there that happens about how do you lose $500 while floating on a river for free? I can show you how. Because it happened to me. That happens there, and we do the comment episode here in addition to movie commentaries and quiplash streams and a bunch of other fun stuff for the people who support us, and we can't say how much we appreciate that. We are coming on, we're just passing 2 years of full-on crowdfunding support, so thank you guys so much.
Yes. And, yeah, those movies, they're often movies that we talk about because they have anniversaries. Like last month, we did. Why am I blanking?
Simpsons,
on
and
Simpsons
Planet
movie,
Apes.
Which turned 10. And I'm like I said last episode. Hopefully, Hot Rod this month.
Hot Rod.
Well, if you like this chronological going through things, we do that with the Simpsons from the beginning on Talking Simpsons with me, Bob Mackey, and Chris. And we talk about every episode of The Simpsons from the start. We are now in season 6, and you can hear that early and get a bunch of extras as well if you go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, or you can find every episode regular-wise, talkingsimpsons.com.
And if you like video games, there's also Video Game Apocalypse, a whole show about video games. And I'm talking movies and stuff on Twitter at Let's Cine Nerd.
Yeah.
Oh, let's talk births and deaths.
Henry joined Video Game Apocalypse somewhat recently for a really fun discussion on the Metal Gear series.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
So if you care about
that. It's an illegitimate anniversary because it was the 30th anniversary of Metal Gear Solid in Japan. Or Metal Gear in Japan.
Again, we discussed this.
We do American release dates here.
The worst anecdote I ever came up with. We don't judge Jonathan Lipnicki's birthday on when we saw him in Jerry Maguire. It's based on when he was born, Dave. Yes. So anyway, right. Diana,
births and deaths. So we had so many deaths last episode. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, with Antonioni and Bergman, and this one we only have one, but it counts as like four because in 1997, Jean Calment, the confirmed oldest person ever, died at 122.
Wow, 122.
She was born in 1875. Wow. She met Vincent van Gogh.
That's amazing.
That's so wonderful.
That is amazing. I mean, there have been rumors that there were people who just didn't count their age who may have been
Japan.
Older than her.
There's a bunch of
usually they're in Japan where it's just the record keeping.
Remember the one we read about, like, oh no, it turns out this guy who thinks he's the oldest person is actually his own brother. And the record keeping got screwed up. What the hell?
But 122. That's confirmed.
Check back in 2104 because I'm going for that record.
All right. Yep. Also, I think a couple of years before she passed away, she released a rap album. So,
whoa. This is the coolest old person ever.
Yeah.
I'm old.
Yeah.
Well, she's old and French.
Also pudding.
Also, I mean, think about, like, in World War II, she was, like, in her 60s.
Yeah, she's like, you think that's bad? You should have seen Cowboy Times.
Good God.
Yes, literally, Cowboy Times.
The Nazis invaded her country, and then she'd be around for 60 more years.
Yeah, right. That's half her life is up to retirement. And then the other half is just retirement.
Oh, my God. Middle age finally means middle age. Yep. All right. All right. Diana, it's time for the...
Born birthday!
Will I continue my sweep? Just give it a shot.
All right.
Born this week, guy and a girl.
Born this week, one guy, one girl. We'll start with the guys this time. Born August 8th, 1937. Turning 80. He has won 2 Academy Awards for Best Actor. In 1967, Life magazine ran a photo of him collecting unemployment when his first big movie was released. He made his directorial debut at the age 75 with Quartet. His films include Papillon, Lenny, Straw Dogs, Little Big Man, Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, I got it. Yes.
I know, this came up.
There's 2 people in Pantheon. I love that movie. What? Who knew it wasn't Steve McQueen?
Yeah. No, but that came up a couple weeks ago on Talking Simpsons. He said, what's happened to Dustin Hoffman? It was 5 years ago he directed his first movie.
Okay, thank God. I'm worried about senility.
Yeah. All right.
Lady Quiz.
Born August 7th, 1975. She was a model and a dancer with the Joffrey Ballet. Studying with Joffrey Ballet until a knee injury ended her career. She made her film debut in 1996 and in 2003 won an Oscar.
Natalie Portman?
No. Here's her filmography in order. I want to see how long it takes you to get. Children of the Corn 3, 2 Days in the Valley,
That Thing You Do,
Trial and Error, Devil's Advocate, Celebrity, Mighty Joe Young.
Charlie's Throne.
Just as the song's over.
Still on the board. Oh, perfect. Man. Well, we have been 302010. Thank you guys so much. Thanks to our pals at Wondery. We're going to close out with Stardust by Nat King Cole.
I love this song. That's why.
It will remain my Stardust melody. The memory of love's refrain.